The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
Good evening. I thought that after Yontif and Purim, which preceded it in a number of weeks, focusing on specific seasonally related issues, that maybe we would begin a new summer series with a review of some basic concepts, ideas, principles of parenting. And a while back we composed a list of some 14 really significant items, the type that you'd want to leave on your refrigerator. Maybe it exists even on the website. If not, I would ask that they put it on. But basics that most of us probably know, but the type of thing that is always appropriate to review. I just wanted to highlight some of these this evening and, you know, maybe elaborate on them. I guess we all know that love is a critical ingredient in communication, in influence of any sort. Maybe what we don't know is that today our children are not as sure as in previous generations that their parents love them. The idea of living for our children is not so commonplace as it was then. They see us very busy, oftentimes too busy with too many other things. And it's very important for us to remember that we must show them, express, and not just with a terse, love you, goodbye, but a real expression of love, love meaning the appreciation of the qualities of an individual we spend time with, attention. It also has to do with showing respect. Because when a person feels, a child feels that he's respected, his self-worth is elevated, his sense of happiness, which is about validation, is affected, and it's also an expression of love. You really care. You care to show me that respect. And something that we expect a lot from our children, sometimes we don't realize how needy they are for respect, respect of their opinions, respect of their space, respect of their shortcomings, or respect for them despite their shortcomings. And this is something that's very critical. Also, there's an element of friendship, showing friendship. We like to spend time together. We can enjoy moments together, enjoy a good laugh together, do something together, enjoy each other's company. This is something which also means so much to them, and probably also because it's part of the validation process. That doesn't mean that we have to forego being parents just because we have a friendship with our children, but when it's a show of love, respect, and friendship, we're nurturing happier, we're nurturing healthier, and we're nurturing children that will find it less difficult to listen to us and do the kinds of things that we would expect them to do. Something that we often hear from our children today is that their parents don't really listen. We talk to them, oftentimes we talk at them, but when it comes to listening, and we call the second item on this list, listen, listen, listen. Sometimes the most important thing in the world is to listen. I'm sure I've mentioned before that there was a famous neurologist in Yerushalayim, Professor Halperin, who was like considered the ultimate authority, psychiatry, neurology, and sent him the most difficult patients. And sometimes when he would find a patient too difficult, he would send him to Rabbi Aryeh Levine, the tzaddik of Yerushalayim. Someone once asked Rabbi Aryeh, like, Professor Halperin can't help him. What do? You know, to help these people. And sometimes he'd be able to tell me, he says, all I do is listen with a bissel mitgefühl. I listen with some empathy. I'm listening. I'm paying attention. I'm listening to his plight. I'm making him feel good about himself because somebody cares enough to listen. I'm showing the respect to listen. I'm giving the person the benefit of somebody listening and relieving the pain that he has, or just sometimes the burden and sharing it with someone else. But it's a very big turnoff to our children, and we hear this complaint time and again that the adult world, and especially the parents and sometimes the teachers, don't listen. They say two words, the kid says two words, and then we're already telling them what to do and telling them this and telling them that. And sometimes the most important thing that we could do is just listen with a little empathy and, you know, for their problems, if it's a problem, and pay attention. Something which also has oftentimes gotten lost in our society is the recognition of the individuality of each one of our children. Everyone is different. Identical twins are different, even if they look alike. Every human being is different. Every neshama has different... the sfarim use. But every neshama has its own individuality, and we can't possibly expect that all of our children should be treated and should be expected to perform to the same standard, expected to be interested in the same things, expected to be successful at the same things. And there has to be a true sense of paying attention to the individual needs of each of our children and attempting to provide the environment which will nurture and nourish those individual needs. Of course, in a society where there are a lot of dress codes in schools, and there's certainly a lot of very common behavioral traits that we expect of everyone, sometimes you have to work a little harder to discover this individuality. But the Torah is based on individuality. People find their perfection in various different mitzvahs. Some people are more into learning, some people are more into chesed, some people are more into spiritual things, all types of things, and there's room for that. And our children have to sense that, even though they're part of a system which expects a commitment to a total body of Torah and mitzvahs, but within that, they must be encouraged, and we must deal with and help them to find the fulfillment of their own individual needs. Just as we know in the world of recreation, some kids are good at one thing, some kids are good at another thing, and we try to guide their extracurricular activities that way too, so too we must recognize the individuality of our children in dealing with their religious and parenting related issues. One of the very important things, and we've mentioned this so many times, is for a kid to feel good about him or herself. We say that that validation is even the definition of osher, which is probably the highest form, one of the highest forms of happiness, feeling good about yourself. One of the most time-hallowed methods and opportunities to feel good about oneself is to succeed. When I succeed at doing something, especially if it's something significant and important, I feel good. I feel good about myself. I succeeded. And if I did it on my own, and if it was a challenge, I rose to the challenge, I really could feel good. And we sometimes have to be alert to provide at all age levels the opportunities to succeed. If the success is too simple, is too easy, is too taken for granted, it's not really an opportunity for feeling good about oneself, because big deal, you know. I'm 10 years old and I was able to take two blocks and stack them, you know, one against each other. So the opportunities for success have to be in sync with the level of capabilities of the students, but of our children. But giving them, providing them, worrying about finding for them the opportunities to succeed, give them constant ongoing chances at feeling good about themselves. And many children don't naturally succeed. Many children shy away from success because they're afraid of failure. And we have to show them and nurture them with opportunities that are realistic enough, that are easy enough that they could succeed, yet challenging enough that they could feel good about the success that they accomplished. In line with this, it's very important to foster a positive self-image. Our children will tend to grow up with the image of themselves as we actually view them. And therefore, to foster a positive self-image, one must actually almost act as a mirror, showing, you know, when they look at us, when they see us, they know that we see that positiveness in them, and therefore they can feel good about themselves. Feelings and insights and attitudes are communicated even without words. And children have a very sophisticated system of picking up on our attitudes towards them. So if we wish to foster a positive self-image, which is critical for their development, then we have to be very careful to hold from them, to believe in them, to really give them that sense in what we say and in how we interact with them, that we really think that they are quite capable. They are good. They are great. They are real. They are able to accomplish, and they can feel good about themselves and develop that self-image because of the way that we treat them. When we treat them like little babies, when they've outgrown that stage, when we don't treat them with the due respect that they may deserve, when we look down on them, when we're constantly putting them down, when we're constantly criticizing and making them feel stupid or whatever, that certainly destroys rather than fosters this positive self-image and can leave lasting blemishes and damage on our children. Something that's also in a maybe religious significance as well is questions and answers. Many of our kids feel that their questions are ignored and answers are not forthcoming. I would like to say that we should encourage the asking of questions and be ready to offer answers. Because, first of all, if a kid has a question and it's ignored, it's very invalidating. It feels very stupid. I can't even ask a good question, let alone know the answer. And it also casts aspersions on us, like we don't want to answer, we're not interested in answering, we don't know the answer, maybe there is no answer. So we don't want to be in such a position. Therefore, it's very important to, from the outset, from the youngest ages, encourage questions and be able to offer them answers. And that may require some study on our part, that may require some thinking on our part, that may require some consultation on our part. And sometimes even a legitimate answer is no, I don't know. However, I'm ready to learn, I'm ready to look up, let's study it together, let's see. But it creates a very sense of, a comfortable sense with Yiddishkeit, and most of the questions are usually about that, and with our parents and with our own self-worth in being able to ask a good question, and with the validity of the Torah and the lifestyle that we have questions about, because it encourages questions and it will answer and it's capable of answering and it has answers for these questions as well. So that's also a very important piece. Provide loving, caring discipline with constant explanation of rules and restrictions. Rules and restrictions, I guess, are, you know, sadly but necessary. A discipline is also something that must be, otherwise our homes will be transformed into jungles. On the other hand, if the discipline and the implementation and the execution of the rules and restrictions is not given with the proper love and caring feeling, then it becomes resented. It becomes very, very arbitrary. It becomes overwhelmingly burdensome, and our kids, you know, oftentimes just can't handle it. On the other hand, if it's with love, so it's already softer, more gentle. If the focus is not because I want the home to be quiet, not because I want the home to be clean, not because I want to have a little peace of mind to be able to relax, but the purpose is because I care for you, because this is not good for your best interest, whether it's your room, whether it's your midos, whether it's the way you act with other people, whatever it may be, but I'm concerned about you developing this way. The focus on the discipline and the rules is my concern for my child rather than for myself, that makes a lot of difference. But another point that's also very important is, even from the youngest ages, explanation of rules. It's logical. It makes sense. A consequence is a logical outgrowth of an inappropriate behavior. And the reason that we have to have such a rule is because so-and-so, because otherwise you, and again, not for me, but for you, you, my child, will be hurt. Your living environment will be compromised. You'll be in danger. You'll be unhappy, whatever the case may be. But hearing it that way, seeing it that way, feeling it that way, makes a very big difference to a child's willingness to accept any rules and regulations and discipline. Another concept that's very important is setting a positive example. The "do as I say, not as I do" dictum, I don't think it ever was valid, but it certainly is not valid with our kids today. They will learn the most from our example. They will learn the most about human relations, seeing the way we relate with other people. They'll learn the most about family and marriage, seeing the way we conduct ourselves. They'll learn the most about Yiddishkeit, seeing the way we conduct ourselves. They'll learn the most about the importance of certain mitzvahs and learning or whatever by the way we conduct ourselves. Not by our speeches nor our preaches, but it's our actions that are the real teachers, and that's really what we need. And that example is critical. The damage of a bad example is, Rashi gives a mashal in Parshas Ki Tsetse, is like a person puts his foot into a hot bath. He gets burnt, but he cools it off for everyone else. People see that somebody did something wrong. It's so much easier to do it, and especially when it's a parent. And our children have such a reverence for their parents, despite the way that they speak. In fact, sometimes the way that they speak is just to find some level of comfort in being able to live in a relationship that they have such reverence for. That's a hard one to sell to parents, but I believe it's true. So that it's very important for us to constantly foster this positive example. We also have to be, besides answering questions, we have to be able to explain benefits and reasons for Torah and mitzvahs. Our children would like to know why they do what they have to do. One of the most significant questions a little kid will start asking is why? Why this? Why that? Why the other thing? Why do I have to do this? Why do I have to do that? And we have to be able to, on some level, give them some answers that speak about the benefits that mitzvahs, the benefits that Torah offers for me, you, for the child, especially for the child, for us, for the individual. And this is extremely important because the burden of mitzvahs is very heavy. Our children are very burdened. In fact, probably it seems to me that the number one reason that the kids go off the derech today, those that do, Rachmona Litzlan, probably has to do with the extent to which they have internalized religious pressure. They take everything very seriously. This is what you have to do. You have to live up to this standard. And if not, you're a serious offender. This is something which, to the older generation, we know how to rationalize, and we can handle it without too much guilt. But to them, it's intense, and it creates a tremendous pressure. And sometimes they can't handle that pressure. And when the mitzvahs are explained, and especially the way the Sefer HaChinuch does it, with a tam v'toeles, he says, with a reason, which some interpret that to mean a taste, a geschmack, and a benefit, so like the pressure is not so great. It's like I'm not being overwhelmingly forced into this observance. I want to do it. It's for my own good. It's my own benefit. And that's a legitimate approach, and that's, I think, a critical and a necessary approach.
That's very hard to do.
We got to work at it. We have to work at it. Sometimes we have to prepare. If they ask us a question, a reason for something, we have to, look it up. if we don't know it. And sometimes we just have to give them the sense that, you know, there are reasons, there are benefits. There are general benefits too. Just a sense of confidence in Hashem, you know, especially in times like this where I know I have someone to turn to. I know there's someone there I could talk to who cares. That's a general benefit of everything. But then there are specific benefits too. And, you know, we have to study. Sefer HaChinuch is wonderful today. If you walk into any bookstore, you'll probably find 10, 20 books that deal with Tamei HaMitzvos and things like that. But that's, I think, a very critical concept. Something else. Unfortunately, today a lot of our children are not being challenged to think. And that makes sometimes learning, for some, less than exciting. Some can be very excited with the massive information that they're learning and trying to master it and take it in and remember it. But others need that challenge to think. And most children enjoy thinking. You can see kids sometimes when it comes to thinking games, you know, riddles and questions and puzzles and things like that. They can sit for hours because they enjoy the challenge. The challenge makes you feel good. Being challenged is exhilarating, satisfying. Succeeding at the challenge is self-validating. It makes me feel very good about myself. And therefore, that's something that we have to, even questions that they get on the parasha, it's much more important to ask them questions that will stimulate thinking rather than just questions that will require them to have memorized information. When I give back memorized information, I don't feel as good about myself because I memorized it. Like anybody could memorize a spelling list, you know. You don't have to be any kind of a genius. You memorize the words. So, too, all right, I memorized it. I knew it. I remembered it, and I gave it back. But when I was challenged to think, and I agonized to find out, and I finally come to some rational, reasonable conclusion, wow, that has a tremendous good feeling of myself. Another good piece of advice would be not to deny the existence of a problem. Kids have problems today. Recently, I've been very impressed. Whereas 30 years ago, I think parents were still denying more the need for professional help and the existence of problems to begin with, and almost like you would wound them mortally if you suggested that their child had a problem. And today, it's become much more fashionable to talk about problems and to go for help. But certainly one cannot deny the existence of a problem. If we do not own up and admit to the problem, then it's doubtful that we'll ever do anything about it. If we admit to the existence of a problem, something is a little different. This kid's not doing it the right way. It's not normal. It doesn't make sense. It's something to worry about. It impairs their proper development. It interferes with this. It helps that. It does something that's wrong. To admit the existence of a problem is the first step towards some resolution. Then, of course, we must find appropriate professional help when the behavior seems beyond the norm for children of that age. Now, here's where parents sometimes are not so good because with our first kid, we don't know what's the norm. With our second kid, we don't remember exactly how the other one was a few years ago and so forth. So sometimes we need outside help just to help us, to help guide us to think whether the problem is beyond the norm or not. But if it is beyond the norm and it does need help, then we must be sophisticated and open enough to recognize that there are social workers and psychologists and psychiatrists and other sometimes agencies for other types of problems, which in our community today can help them. Many of them are staffed by devoutly religious people who appreciate where our kids are coming from or where they should be going. But that's something which is critical for us to be able to take advantage of. Another point which I think is also very important is to inspire a positive and active relationship with Hashem. This concept of relationship with Hashem is a little bit foreign to some of us. Some people don't, or they get some, they're squirmish even to talk about a relationship with Hashem. We never saw that, you know, in the movies. We don't really know too much about it. But it's very critical. It's very soothing. It gives a great menuchas hanefesh. It gives a person a sense of validity that I have this relationship with the Creator. It's very uplifting. It's a very important feeling. And Some of the things that help us to develop this relationship are the recognition of Hashem's Hashkocha Protis. When we see Hashkocha Protis, sometimes little, sometimes massive, sometimes in between, but we feel and see Hashem's involvement in our lives. So we realize the relationship is reciprocal. You know, I talk to him in tefillah, and he responds with his Hashkocha Protis. I put my bitochon in him, I trust him, and he responds with his Hashkocha Protis, with the little miracles that he performs for us. This is very important to inspire our children to also feel that they can have a sense of a positive relationship with Hashem through recognizing his Hashkocha Protis, through bitochon and through tefillah. One more point, which I think is also very critical, and we mentioned it a little bit before, and that as much as possible, limit pressure and criticism as much as realistically possible, because these things intend, instead of building up, they put down. I've probably told this story before, but there was a young man in one of our programs who, after about 6 months, was really making some significant progress. And I sat down and spoke with him. I asked him, what happened? How'd you know, what was the factor? So he says, you did it. He says, I did it. I barely talked to you. He says, no, but you believed in me. The power of the fact that I believe in you. So that gives me such a validation that I'm worthy, I'm good, I'm capable. It's very important to feel that. Unfortunately, when we're critical of our children, we tend to be sometimes overly critical because the Yiddishkeit means so much to us, and it's so important, and we have so many different concerns, and we're so much at edge sometimes ourselves that we don't tolerate their inappropriateness or inappropriate actions, and we start criticizing and put further pressure on them. And sometimes that could be the most devastating thing in the world, because it doesn't allow a child to feel good, to feel that he's really something. One of the most caustic, I think, examples of this concept is at the beginning of Parshas Dvorim, where Moshe Rabbeinu is informed that he is going to pass on, and he gives reprimand, rebuke to Chocha, to Klal Yisrael, but in a very gentle way, and hints and remozim and so forth. And Rashi brings over there that Moshe waited till the end of his life, because before that he was afraid to give this to Chocha. And he says Yaakov Avinu learned from him. And Rashi brings over there that when Yaakov Avinu was on his deathbed, he called in Reuven, and he said to him, Reuven, I want to be mochiach you, I want to reprimand you for the mistake that you made, you know, many years before. And Rashi says that the reason that he didn't reprimand him before, because he was afraid that had he reprimanded his son Reuven before he was on his deathbed, I guess it's easier on the deathbed, he's not going to see him after that, whatever. He says he was afraid that had he reprimanded him before he was on his deathbed, he would have left him, Reuven would have left him, Lidobek Be'esov Ochi, to join forces, to join the yeshiva of Esov. Reuven, such a tzaddik. Yaakov, such a gentle soul in the way he would give to Chocha. And yet, Chazal say that Yaakov was afraid that if Reuven the tzaddik would have gotten to Chocha from Yaakov before he was on his deathbed, when it wasn't so soft or mitigated, he says he was afraid he would leave him, the tzaddik Reuven would leave him to go to the Rosh HaEsav to learn by him in his yeshiva. This is the power. Criticism sends us running for hiding. Criticism devastates. And even if the criticism is not that deeply personal, but says something that I, some shortcoming, it can destroy everything that we have. So I think this is also an important point to keep in mind. And I think all of these together, if they're reviewed constantly, they're not any great chochmas, But their idea is that if we were to review constantly and keep in mind, would surely make a difference in a very positive way in the way we deal with it.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority-one.org. That's priority-1.org, where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.